T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Mully and Hall, live and local. Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Banks it in!
KC Johnson.
Come and get some of this.
Bulls basketball.
Whoa! Stop it!
Taking you inside the locker room with KC Johnson.
Oh my goodness! Did you not get the memo?
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. KC Johnson joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Hotline. Morning, KC. How are you?
Morning, KC.
What's going on, guys? How you doing?
Well, the Bulls have a new head coach, and we talked about it a little bit earlier. I apologize for being surprised that they ended up with Billy Donovan. I thought it was a great hire. I think it is. I'm hoping it is. And it kind of snuck up on me just because I don't know that I expected them to splash the cash. As simple as that.
Right. And we're still kind of adjusting to a new regime, right? And, you know, say what you want about the John Paxson and Gar Forman era, you know, which included a lot of success and then some difficult times down the stretch. We just weren't used to decisions like this. I mean, John did make a hire of a coach with experience for his first hire way back in 2003 when he replaced Bill Carter with Scott Skiles. But we didn't have the 24/7 news cycle we have now and social media. And, you know, Scott, while accomplished because he had success at Phoenix, you know, probably didn't have the resume that Billy Donovan has at the time. You know, Scott's a great coach. I think Billy is a good fit for this team, and I think people are reacting, you know, to the overall positivity that's been happening since they made the overhaul in April.
KC, I think the level of surprise involves the fact, maybe not that the Bulls pursued Billy Donovan and chose him, but that he chose the Bulls. There's some other really good jobs out there. He still is going to be the coach of the Bulls, and I imagine he had some options. What does that say about the type of job this is and where the Bulls are with their organization?
Well, and that's a good point, David. And extrapolating upon that, you could read the tea leaves that, you know, a big reason why, although I'm not sure if it was explicitly stated, it was certainly reported or inferred that he and Oklahoma City mutually agreed to part ways, was they just weren't quite sure the direction of that franchise. And most people expect, you know, given the massive draft overhaul that Sam Presti has accrued, they're going to move into a kind of a youth movement and rebuilding phase. So the fact that he left a comfort zone there and a strong working relationship with Sam Presti to pursue, you know, a situation that is also in a rebuild situation, and quite frankly hasn't had anywhere near the success that even Oklahoma City had last year, speaks volumes. And to me, what it speaks to is that Arturis Karnišovas was able to sell his vision. And I would love to have been a fly on the wall for some of the conversations they had about personnel, because if one thing Arturis has proven to this point, you know, since he took over in April, is that he's not afraid to make, you know, bold decisions. He's got an idea, he's got a vision, and he's going to go try to execute it. Now, will he be able to execute everything he wants to do regarding the roster? Maybe not. I mean, if he does have trade ideas or trade designs, obviously it takes two teams, sometimes three teams, to execute those plans. But it is clear that Arturas was able to sell his vision of this franchise, of this roster, of the direction that he wants to pursue to a guy who's had success really everywhere he's gone.
And again, you know, this is a guy that if you think about it, has a higher profile than Arturas Karnišovas. I mean, there's no ego involved in bringing in somebody that would be more well-known than you, right? I mean, it tells you that he's all about the basketball. He's not about trying to push his own brand, so to speak.
That's exactly right. And also, that's a great point. I wrote that in my column at NBCSportsChicago.com. Beyond that, he didn't have a previous working relationship with Billy Donovan. And that to me speaks to someone, a leader or an executive who's comfortable in his own skin, who, you know, once he got in the interview phase with Billy Donovan, found shared basketball vision, found shared basketball philosophy, and put aside, you know, the trust factor that he might have had with a guy like, say, Wes Unseld Jr., who he's been in the trenches with, you know, in Denver. So, it's funny because I was talking about, obviously, a bunch of people around the league last night, and that point kept coming up that these two guys hadn't worked together, didn't know each other well. But another thing that kept coming up from people that know both of them pretty well is that they actually have a lot of shared personality themes. They are what you just were talking about, Molly. Selfless and not ego-driven. They're worried about the team construct and not individual success. They're focused on the right things. They're just adults. And you know, that's the other thing is they're just comfortable with their relationship building and with their presence with players and things like that. And so, even though they may not have worked together, I'm guessing, well, I don't need to guess because it's happened. When they got in the room together, they found a lot of shared ground.
KC, when Donovan was at Florida for so many years, I mean, he would give clinic presentations on his spread pick and roll, and that would become a thing that he'd be known for. He goes to the NBA, and with guys like Westbrook and Durant, there was a share of isolation basketball, obviously. And then he evolved, and there's obviously the pace and space. Coming to the Bulls, what do we expect in terms of an offensive style, and who might that benefit?
That's a great question, and I won't have a great answer for it because I think what you're talking to is another trait you hear about Billy in terms of his coaching style is he's incredibly flexible and he coaches to his personnel. You can even make that point defensively. I mean, Oklahoma City was a team that for a long time was really aggressive blitzing the pick and roll, and then last year when they got into more of a younger team, they kind of moved to more of a drop defense, and Steven Adams anchored it. And they were still pretty strong defensively. So he really does, you know, last year's team was so different than the other team he had coached in Oklahoma City, and they played differently. So I don't know the answer to that because I also don't know who's going to be on the roster. You can start speculating on some stuff. I mean, all we heard coming out of Duke for the pre-draft comps for Wendell Carter Jr. was Al Horford. Well, guess who coached Al Horford to a lot of success in college? And that's Billy Donovan. Right. So, you know, you could maybe guess that there's going to be benefit for him. I'm going to be curious to see if Chris Fleming sticks around. He's just finished the first year of his three-year deal. He has a very strong working relationship with Arturas and has led a lot of the individual offseason workouts and will have a crucial role in these group workouts that begin today. My guess, and this is a guess, I'm not reporting this, is that he will stick around, so he'll have a say in the offense as well. But I think the overall point that you bring up, David, is the important one to take away from Billy Donovan in talking to people about him last night is that he really does coach to fit his personnel. And that will be a difference from last year. You know, obviously Jim was very resolute in his approach last year. He picked two styles that were pretty polarizing. The Bulls had some success with one of those styles, with the aggressive pick and roll coverages, and the leading the league in forced turnovers. But he didn't budge off stuff. And I think Billy, you know, will. And I also think Arturas, you know, while having a strong vision, has shown the ability to collaborate as well. So I'm going to be curious to see how the answer to your question plays out.
It's fascinating. The Bulls have had a 3.10 winning percentage over the last three seasons, which is second worst in the NBA, during those 3 years. The Knicks, the only team that's worse. You think about Billy Donovan coming in, and the question is twofold. Does he attract free agents? Is that something you can sell people? And can you do it this year? Because it seems like the team that you have, and who among that group would be most affected by this guy coming in, do you think, Casey?
Well, I'll tackle the first question first. I mean, all I'll say about whether he can attract free agents is, regardless of if Billy Donovan can solely himself, what this hire to me says is, again, the Bulls are moving into the modern NBA, where they recognize that player empowerment and player relationships and player recruitment and all that stuff is a reality. And all you hear about all these guys since they've been hired are Terrence Curtis-Jones, Mark Eversley, Pat Connolly, now Billy Donovan. They are people that have a wide, vast array of network relationships that are based on genuine, substantive human interactions. And so, you know, will that translate to free agency success? I have no idea. You know, I don't know what the roster's going to look like. What if the Bulls make a bold trade that eats up their cap space that's projected for 2021 between, you know, now and then? What I will say is they're in the game now. The overhaul of this franchise has been complete. It's been dramatic, and it's pushed the Bulls, from my estimation, into the modern NBA. Now they've got to go do it on the court, and they've got to obviously do it with the roster. They've got to upgrade the roster. But I think it's just a continuation of the Bulls recognizing, and this goes way back to Michael Reinsdorf at Arturis Karnišovas's introductory press conference, talking about John Paxson coming to him and saying, we're not in step with the times, and I can't do this anymore, and we need to change. And so from that moment on, to me, it's just flowed in the direction of the Bulls recognizing they need to kind of modernize their approach and join the today's NBA.
Casey, I saw the news, and I've always liked Billy Donovan's, but my mind went right back to the 1987 Providence Final Four team. And I think that, and I remember that team, and I remember him as a player because of the power of his personality. He almost willed that team to the Final Four, and he was like that as a coach. And I think that you wonder what he's going to be like as an NBA coach with the Bulls. And you talk to Joakim Noah, who knows him as well as anybody. What was that conversation like, and how would you describe his personality, what you know of it?
Yeah, it's funny because I distinctly remember sitting in the locker room with Joakim a million years ago. This was early in Joakim's Bulls career. It was a road game. I don't remember what city we were in. I want to say Charlotte or New Orleans. I can't remember. But this was when Billy was still in Florida, and it was one of those times where, you know, you guys have been in these locker rooms all the time, where kind of like an organic conversation started in the locker room, and you're kind of eavesdropping, and then the players kind of turn to you and ask you, and you're kind of all of a sudden part of the conversation. It was about college coaches that the room thought could make the jump to the NBA. And I distinctly remember Joakim kind of getting angry because, in Joakim's, unique style, like, hey, this guy wouldn't be a good NBA head coach. He'd be a great NBA head coach. And you know, it was all the rage back then, you know, guys, you know, Lon Kruger and guys making jumps and not always succeeding, obviously. And, you know, look, it's been borne out that, you know, Billy obviously had a lot of success in Oklahoma City. So what I would say is, you know, when I asked Joakim last night, you know, why did you think that so far back then and why do you think it's played out? And he said it's just his ability to relate to players and his ability to hold players accountable while also having good relationships with them. And that's a tough balance to strike in the NBA. But he was able to do it, you know, obviously in Florida, and he was obviously able to do it in Oklahoma City. It's the ability to treat people similarly. He says he holds the first player on the team accountable like he holds the 15th person on the team accountable. So, you know, Joakim's love for this guy is well-documented and palpable. You know, at the end of the conversation, I joke with Joakim, well, you are a free agent now, but we'll save that conversation for another time. So we'll see what happens. Bulls don't have a lot of roster spots. They have 13 games.
Yeah.
That's actually a couple of draft picks, some of them. But You know, Joakim will always be so associated with this franchise that I just felt it'd be good to talk to him last night about this hire. And he was pretty fired up about it because he cares for this city, Joakim, I'm talking about now, and he cares for this franchise. And his excitement for this hire was pretty darn palpable.
Great stuff, KC. Thank you.
Good job,
all right, guys.
KC.
Good talking to you, man. Thank you. Yep.
All right, we're going to bring in Michael Lombardi, and we'll ask him the question that seems to be on everyone's mind. Are we watching Mitch Trubisky improve in front of our eyes? Is Mitch a better player? Will Michael Lombardi agree with Pro Football Focus and Mike Florio? We'll ask him the question next. Mullion Hall on the Score.
Michael Lombardi.
You couldn't get me to buy Mitchell Trubisky if you had him at a discount rack at Seeley's basement.
Radio.com Sports NFL Insider.
We didn't even talk about the Bears Giants, but Matt Nagy was putting on a clinic on what not to do out there, right? So Matt Nagy's got a 4th and 5 at the Giant 38. He punts. Later in the game, he tries a 55-yard field goal. Like, seriously, this is what we're going to do? And just for the record, he's 0-for-1 on these field goals. And now you give the Giants a chance to come back down the field.
Looking at the league from a front office perspective.
We know Chicago's 2-0. They're a myth 2-0 team. I mean, they got 2 wins, but I mean, seriously, they beat Detroit and they beat the Giants. So that division's bad. I mean, the NFC isn't very good.
Michael Lombardi, every Wednesday with Mullion Haw on 670 The Score. The Score.
Mully at Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 in The Score. And on the line is Radio.com insider Michael Lombardi, brought to you by the Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. Turn your football picks into $1,000 by signing up to Radio.com/picks. And you can get yourself all signed up. And Michael joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Hotline. Good morning, Michael. How are you, sir?
Morning, Michael.
I am great. Good morning, everyone. Hope everybody's good.
We're holding up, and, you know, the Bears have been shocking the world, 2-0. And when you laugh at that, I mean, we don't know how to take it. We think that maybe they're getting better.
Watch
Mitch
it.
Is better.
Oh, come on, please. Stop. They played against one of the worst defenses in football. They scored 17 points. I mean, they're lucky to come out of there. I mean, the Detroit game, they came from behind. I mean, look, wins are hard to get in the NFL. I grant them the 2 wins, but when the level of competition is going to rise, I think it's going to be more challenging, and, you know, I just don't see it. I mean, their defense has played really well. You know, they got the ball. I thought Matt's decisions in that game were perplexing, to say the least. And, you know, he gave them a chance. I mean, they're throwing the ball in the end zone, and they don't, you know, it's a chance to win the game.
You know, Michael, I agree with you on a couple of the calls in 3rd and 4th down, and I think the attempt at a field goal is worthy of scrutiny. But I do think Matt Nagy has made a commitment to run the ball more than he had in 2019, and I guess you know how we look at it here in Chicago. That's considered progress when you can get a coach who has been so resistant to want to do that. That's an incremental step in the right direction, and that's why I think 2-0. You look at it, we're all pretty honest about the way things are and what they are and what they're not. But that to me is one of the biggest developments so far in this young season.
No doubt. I mean, I think the other fact is he's been much better on play calling on 3rd down. I mean, I think what were they, 9-15 on 3rd down in that game? I mean, they're always going to have 9-16 on 3rd down in the game. They're always going to have a high propensity of 3rd downs because they can't really make explosive plays with their offense. But I don't disagree with you. I think, you know, they ran the ball effectively. Look, you know, if Swift catches that pass in the end zone, which he should do, they're 1-1. And, you know, there's a chance. So you got to be realistic. But you also can't say, hey, you know, we're not going to give the wins back. You're 2-0. You're building some momentum. The defense looked much better with Quinn back out there rushing the passer. You know, they took over the game from the Giants. I mean, the Giants struggled to move the ball at all, especially on 3rd down where they were 3-for-13. So a win's a win. You move on. But I think you got to know you're going to have to play a lot better to beat the better teams in the National Football League.
You know, we've talked about Jalen Johnson, the rookie cornerback who's been kind of forced into action, and there was an opening, and he's taken it, and he's done okay. But, the Detroit is without Galladay, and we know that Shepard goes down in that game against the Giants. Now you got Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley coming up here. how much does that challenge a rookie corner, and how much do you try to pick on him if you're Atlanta?
Well, you're going right after him if you're Atlanta. Look, Julio Jones hasn't had the season that I think everybody thought he would. Calvin Ridley's been sensational in the game, and I think that the Falcons' offense has been really good. The Falcons' defense hasn't been. And I think we're, if you're Matt Nagy, and what you talked about earlier about the run game, I mean, I think one of the things you should always try to do is play less defense, right? Like the best teams in the league always play 25 minutes, 26 minutes of defense. You know, it's when these teams have to play 32, 33 minutes. I mean, against the Giants, the Bears played 25 minutes of defense because they were able to convert third downs. And against a team like Atlanta, with their explosive offense, with their ability to get the ball down the field, you're going to have to control the ball on them. You're going to have to go in there and run the ball. There's no crowd noise, so you should be able to run the ball against an Atlanta defense that, frankly, hasn't been very good the first 2 weeks.
You know, you look at the Bears' defense, Michael, and I think getting to the quarterback, they got to Daniel Jones four times, but it didn't seem as if he was harassed to the extent that you expected. Chuck Pagano is relying on the front four to get to the quarterback. He's not using a lot of blitzes. He's not coming at in a lot of ways. Does that have to change moving forward, do you think? Do you trust your cornerbacks more or less? Or how do you think overall defensively they will be their plan to create more, I guess, pressure on the quarterback?
You know, it's all about the quarterback, right? Daniel Jones, when Chuck forced him to play faster, he really wasn't very good. You know, Daniel Jones is good when he's got time. He can set his feet, check the runners at first and third, then throw the ball to the plate. You know, he's a slow-moving quarterback. And when the game speeds up, which it often does on third down, he hasn't been able to speed up his play, which I think has got to concern New York Giants fans. But look, the Giants are 12-38 since the boat trip with Odell. So they're not a good team at all. So I don't want to put it all on Daniel Jones, but I think this week the challenge is Matt Ryan is really good, and he can play fast. And you're going to have to mix in some coverages, and you're going to have to put some pressure on him to create him to not feel comfortable making all these throws, because they can move the ball. They moved it in the second half against Seattle. Now everybody's moving the ball in Seattle. Seattle's offense has just been so good. But I think that's going to be the key. The key to this game is going to be which team can control the pace of the game. And that's going to be critical. The Bears must control the pace, because I don't think they can leave their defense out there for 33 minutes against this offense and think they're going to win.
Michael, when you look at a guy like Allen Robinson, right, he's looking for some big money. They seem to be a $2 to $3 million apart on what that deal would look like per year. And you're watching this thing unfold, and he cleaned all his social media account and requested a trade, according to reports. And now we see him have a rough game. How does that sort of thing play within the locker room? Players are supporting him, but how big a distraction can it become for the player? And then you see the Bears turn around and sign Tariq Cohen to a 3-year extension, and he had a bad year last year, and he's a good punt returner. But I don't know that you give him that kind of money. And the kid said yesterday, well, I left some on the table. You know, we got to get Allen Robinson done. I just don't know what to make of where they're prioritizing things and how you go about making sure you get the receiver under contract, or if you even bother.
Well, I didn't understand the Cohen contract. I really didn't. I mean, the guy's not a running back, and he's not really a receiver. He's a specialist. You know, he comes into the game, and, you know, look, what did he average, 2.4 yards a carry in the last game? He had 5 carries. Everybody know, you know, he's not going to break tackles. Unless he has space to run, it's going to be a challenge. And then, you know, Robinson's a good player, but I think if I were Allen Robinson's agent, I would say, look, Allen, I think we're better off going somewhere and getting in the open market, because we're never going to get the ball down the field in this offense. I mean, they're going to get, you know, these wins are going to start making them realize they need to extend Mitchell, which is what they'll do, because that's really what they want to do. And it's probably not going to be the best place for you. The open market is going to be a lot better. And when they signed Cohen, that told me that they're more interested in signing the players they drafted than actually looking at the tape and understanding. I mean, you can see it. It's pretty clear. I mean, you know, when you go through it, I mean, Jimmy Graham, they give him an $8 million. You know, he's got 4 receptions for 43 yards. And that's worth $8 million? But they know Jimmy Graham. They had Jimmy Graham in New Orleans. So there's, when Pace is signing guys that he's familiar with, And I think if I were Robinson's agent, I would just say, look, we're better off just sitting in the open market. I think the market out there will be more favorable for us.
Bears are 2-0, Eagles are 0-2. Which team would you think you have more confidence right now is going to be in the playoffs?
I Philly's not very good. People don't realize this. I wrote about it in The Athletic. Philly has, you know, when you win a Super Bowl, people don't look at you as closely as before, right? So Philly, since the Super Bowl, is 19-18. Carson Wentz is a starter. It's 14-16. Carson Wentz in the Super Bowl season averaged 9.45 yards per attempt on third down. Remarkable. It was one of the most remarkable third down seasons I've ever seen in a quarterback. And then this year, he's back down about 6'3". He's back to normal. He's been normal. The means went back. So to answer your question, I don't have one. I think clearly the Eagles' linebacking core might be the worst in the National Football League. Their secondary is not very good. Their front's good, where I think the Bears are better on defense. I think the Eagles offensively could be better, but they don't have any players. I think this is which you don't ever want to be in football, too young and too old. The Eagles have some young receivers they're counting on. They've got old receivers that are too old, and the quarterback's paying a price because the receivers aren't helping them out. I'm not really sure what the Eagles are, other than they won the Super Bowl 2 years ago. They're kind of having that Super Bowl left. I mean, they're 19-18. They're one game over 500. And eight of those wins, guys, have been against Washington and the New York Football Giants.
What was your takeaway from the injuries, from the number of ACL injuries and from the number of players that were lost over the weekend? What does it say to you? Does it relate to the kind of ramp up and no preseason and all the rest of it?
I do. I think that, you know, I think it's hard. But I mean, when you look at Saquon, he got his knee caught in the wrong position on the grass. I mean, you know, people are complaining about the Meadowlands turf. Saquon got hurt on the grass field. Football's a game of injuries. Building a football team's the war of attrition. You've got to have depth. And, you know, you lose guys. The Eagles lose Dillard, their starting left tackle, to a bicep injury during a walkthrough. You know, it just happens. I mean, you know, guys get hurt. And, you know, Von Miller, the last play of the practice, blows out his ankle. So it's football. And unfortunately, we have a lot of injuries, and that's why you need to have really good depth. That's why you need to have really good drafts at times to supplement your draft. So I think this is human. This is just part of the game. I think it gets overemphasized when we lose some stars like Bosa. It hurts San Francisco tremendously. You know, it's just challenging.
Great stuff, Michael. Thank you for your time. We appreciate
it. Best of luck, guys, this weekend. We'll talk next week. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
That was Radio.com Insider Michael Lombardi, brought to you by the Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. Turn your football picks into $1,000 by going to Radio.com/picks to sign up. Always good to talk to Michael. He is suspicious, to say the least, of the Chicago Bears. You got to wonder if suspicion is creeping into Ozzie Guillen's mind as he watches what's happening right now with the White Sox losing a series in Cincinnati and carrying their troubles through Ohio with two losses to the Cleveland Indians. We'll get to Ozzie after we hear from Kev Boe.
Ozzie Guillen.
I'm the captain of the boat.
Former White Sox manager.
I mean, I don't know how much payment I watch.
Can I go to watch the All-Star game? Hell no.
Talking the latest around Major League Baseball. Ozzie Guillen.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a joy to talk to Ozzie Guillen. He joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Hotline. Good morning, Ozzie.
Morning, Oz.
Good morning, guys. What's going on? How you guys doing?
Got to tell you, with Bieber and Plesac coming up here and the Sox, I'm worried about a sweep, honest to God. I mean, I saw them score three runs against Bieber. I saw them hit two homers, and then the bullpen blew it. But after watching the last couple nights, I don't know. I just don't know what to make of this team right now.
Well, it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard because last night we feel good about it, the way they come back.
Yeah,
they went to play all game long and all the stun. You know, I mean, it was funny because everything happened. A great thing happened to the White Sox. Got there and take the lead, and also Colomé. The question was, why Colomé is not pitching? Then we find out it was little sore spine, back spam, and everything went south. And everything was looked pretty good all the way to the end. I think people know how to think about the end of the game. I know it's hard to watch. It's hard to believe. It's hard to see how in the end you can lose a game when you are by two runs, lay on the game in 2 hours. You say, well, you know what? The good thing happened. Well, obviously it doesn't. Now we're facing, you know, I mean, it's going to be pretty fun because Yolito come for us, Keiko go for them. It seemed like a preview of the first round playoff. But meanwhile, some reason, Cleveland always play good against White Sox back in Cleveland. And the one thing about it, you have to turn around and say, you know what, guys, we're still in the first place. We cannot think about negative stuff. It's too late now to think about it. Just continue to move on.
Ozzie, I was worried that you were going to cuss on television last night. You looked pretty distraught after the game. I'm glad that you didn't. I'm glad we're talking to you this morning. What happens to a team after it accomplishes something? It seems as if the White Sox sort of exhaled after, you know, clinching the playoff berth, and they have not been the same team since.
Well, you can it's one easy way to put it. You know, they're facing Cincinnati Reds. They're facing the Cleveland Indians. They know when the schedules come up back in March, they know the last 10 games of the season could be hard. And I say maybe a week ago, I told Chuck Garfield, I said, you know me, the White Sox have to rely from now on every game they play. It can be from here to all the way to the World Series. It will be harder and harder and harder every day. And I feel kind of weird because when you face teams, rebuilding teams like Detroit, Kansas City, too long, all of a sudden you're facing a team they're going to compete, you can see the different ball game. You can see different ball game. You can see, I don't say real baseball, but you say a real competition. And that's why they start being short because there was, for a week and a half, 2 weeks, they was kicking people behind and play the game with fun, swagger. We know we're going to win. All of a sudden, they hit the wall. Say, oh, God, now we got to face a team. They're competing to be in a playoff race. And you can see they're a little different.
It's kind of fascinating because I think that there is a conspiracy theory out there about the back spasms with Colome that, in reality, because they had already pinch-run Yolmer, and when Tim Anderson gets thrown out, you have to then bring in Grandal, he's the only guy left to hit. You would have to put Grandal at shortstop because Yolmer came in for the DH, and you can't replace the DH. It's either the DH or the pitcher. They're kind of married together. So Colome had to come down with back spasms in order to clear a spot for Yolmer to play shortstop, if that makes any sense. At least that seems to be a theory that is out there, and I guess we won't know unless they need Colome tonight and he ends up being able to go. But when you see guys thrown out, and Ricky has been thrown out in each of the last two games after not getting thrown out all year, and I don't think any other manager has been. Look, the umpiring was god-awful. Angel Hernandez, there's a reason we know his name, and it's not because he's good. But does that imply to you, or does that signify in any way that the Sox are losing composure?
Well, let me ask you first question. Is that was the problem? They had to take Colome out. You better off say, you know what? That's the move we have to make because we don't have a shortstop. I think that's easier to understand and believe. Now the problem is, I say yesterday in the air, no player come out from one day to another, say, I feel better today. And in 24 hours, 14 hours, especially when you're a closer. But it was nice to see, you know, I mean, better way to say, you know what? We had to make this move. We had to take Colome out because this is happening. And we know us ready to make this move because we don't know who got to get kicked out. Then say, you know, Colome is hurt. That's why we make a move. Second, you know what I mean? I think Angel has been bad all his career. No, it's just, you know, it's just that's the way it is.
It
has been. Very well. Yesterday was very consistent, very bad consistent because it was both sides.
Bad, yes,
very bad. And and one day I remember we played in Oakland one time. Angel behind the plate, Mulder was pitching with Burley, And those guys are strike machine. And he was missing call, and I just screaming to him. I said, "You drunk?" And he turned around. He goes, "What did you say?" I said, "Hey, are you drunk?" And I say, "No." I go, "Wrong answer. I'd rather you say, yes, I'm drunk, I'm missing the play." But I go, "Hey, you're not wrong answer." But, it was pretty bad. And I think yesterday, Renteria tried to protect his player. I think he did the right thing. 2 days in a row when you play, you know, it don't look good when you play, you're in the penalty race, go to play, you know, you kicked out of the game. See, like you laid the team along. Like you let the team handle it by different manager mentality. You see it that way. But at the two times went out, I don't blame you. I don't blame him to go out because he got to protect his player. I think Angel was very bad. He was calling pitch. You don't give the guys a chance to get a better, especially late in the game. When the game was so close, so tight, when you miss a call like that, you miss all of the game. But I don't blame him to detour the game. I think it's not a, I don't think it's a big deal. I think the players got to go out there and the frustration. Well, we have bad day, we have bad night. Last night when we went back in the air, I was like, I got to relax because I'm a curse. But hey, being that position before, it's weird because in our crew. Camera crews, Chuck, they're, you know, White Sox fan. I have to think he's a manager. I'm not going to think he's a baseball fan. I got to think he's an analysis to talk about the game. But, my God, when we were back in the air, it's like, I told Frank, I'm going to need to relax because this one hurt. This one hurt for real. And the way they were playing, it hurt a little bit more.
Ozzie, thinking as a manager, when you look at the White Sox bullpen, one of the bright spots in the past week, they've struggled, but Garrett Crochet has been a guy that has stood out. And last night, in a high-leverage situation, he came through again. You weren't shy in 05 to go into Bobby Jenks, despite his inexperience, despite what you know he had yet to accomplish. How willing do you think Ricky Renteria will be to turn to Garrett Crochet in the postseason, in a playoff situation, to get big outs, given what you've seen so far?
That's not a brain. That kid got good stuff. No matter if you got great stuff, you throw 100, but you're scared, or you're not throwing strikes, your body language, how you handle it on the mound at any particular time. Last two games, this guy pitched, besides the guy, unbelievable arm, he got all those. There's a check mark in everything about a guy can pitch any time, any level against anyone. And if the White Sox have a meeting about can we keep this guy, I don't think they're taking the right thing. I think that guy is locked in since the second, first day they pitch, especially yesterday with the game on the line, a big game. Well, it's not a big game. Every game is big for last week. A very important game. And went out and did a tremendous job. That guy's a lucky. And I think right now I see kids with a great arm back in the bullpen. I think White Sox future is very bright out of the bullpen because those guys got great arm. They throw strike there around the plate. I don't know why Cordero's throwing every 2 seconds. Every time we watch again, Cordero's in the bullpen throwing the ball very good. But bullpen, I think one of the biggest reasons the White Sox, they are what they are because the bullpen hold the opposition and the offense got a chance to win. The bullpen in a balance, in a percentage, I think doing better job than bad job.
I don't want to get carried away, Ozzie, but I think I might have, we've talked about this before, I might have seen enough of Edwin Encarnacion. I might have seen enough of Nomar Mazara. I'm now worried I've seen enough of Moncada and Louis Robert. It might be a good idea to give those guys a day off. Now I want 4 guys out of the lineup, which seems kind of crazy to me. But I don't know what's happened to Louis Robert. I think he needs time off. I think he just needs something. And Moncada, too. And running out
of players. I don't know about Moncada. Going to have a day off. We're going to only play half of the season. He's having a day off every other day.
Yeah.
And that's kind of hard to see. You know, one thing about Monkey, I know like his body language. I know he's a very low-key guy, very back, you know what I mean, very nice kid. But his body language, like, he's tired, like, you don't want to be there. Even when he got big hits, he's just like, hey, what's up, guys? With Roberts, I don't think he's too young to get a day off. You know, most day off is a mentally day off. Frank, me and Frank, we talk about it. It's a one day off, but now it's only, what, 4 or 5 games left? I think with him, I think if they move him up to second hitter, I think it's going to be better because you're going to see better pitch. That's what I think. I think this guy is swinging everything. The league knows he's a first-pitch swinger. He's free. He's a free swinger. But when that kid was in the top of the lineup, he was hitting 370, 380. And when you move down and people start talking about him and how dangerous he was when he hit, and you put him down, be protected by Mazzara, that kid, I'm not going to throw any strike to him at all. But if you move it to batting second, I think this kid going to have a better chance because you have between two MVP candidates. And I think this kid can do more damage there. And we've seen it in the past. We've seen it before, how it can hit when you need a protection. But be honest with you, we batting seven, batting eight, I'm not throw to him. I think right now it's pressure a little bit. And chasing a lot of bad pitching. Yeah, I think he gets in the wrong pitch all the time. But you put this man in the middle lineup, in the middle of two MVP candidates, he got a chance to do some damage because then you have to pitch to him.
Great stuff, Ozzie. Thank you so much. Always a joy to talk to you.
Thanks, Ozzie. Good stuff.
All right, guys. Take care, guys. Thank you.
Yep.
That's Ozzie Guillen. Incredible. And I'm worried about the Sox right now, David. It's just losing 4 or 5 is kind of ruining my Sox buzz.
Been a tough week. Doesn't get any easier either with the Indians, given what they're going to give you the next couple of days. And then the Cubs, you know, they could be playing. Who knows what that will be at stake this weekend, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
All right, we've got Tommy Hotovy. We're going to talk to him next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.